you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another week of Elder Talk. This is Joe Cordell with my co-host, Susan Arthur, and producer. We have lined up a show for you today that I think you're going to find very helpful and very interesting. Many of you will recall that a few weeks ago we did a show talking about the challenges of deciding where to move. When you hit that 60-plus period, often you're thinking, you know, should I move to an apartment? Should I move to should I stay in my own place? Should I think about assisted living, skilled care, all those options? And a critical component of that entire discussion was the question about what do you do with your stuff? Mm-hmm. So we thought a perfect follow-up to that show, and something quite frankly of interest to people as we get older anyway, is what do we do with our stuff? So I left it to Susan to find somebody who would know about what seniors should do with their stuff and give us some good thoughts and ideas on this topic. And Susan, as always, has delivered a wonderful and interesting guest. Susan, tell us about who we're going to hear from.
Today we have Denise Lee. Now, Denise is the owner of Clear Spaces Professional Organizing and Coaching. She is a certified professional organizer and coach. She is a chronic disorganization specialist. Boy, that's what I need. And has additional certifications in life transitions and understanding the needs of the elderly client. She is the past president of the St. Louis chapter of the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals and is a graduate of an ADD coaching program. Thanks a lot for joining us, Denise. Well,
thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Well, and I have to tell you that this whole thing about the way life works, you know, when you're younger, you accumulate stuff. So you go through the years, and it's always a net gain. You may get rid of some stuff, but you always take in more than you get rid of, whether it's souvenirs, whether it's just buying furniture and things for the house. So over a period of decades, you hit your 50s and 60s and 70s, and you're thinking, well, if I decide to move to a place that has less room, what do I do with this stuff? And others simply think, why do I need this stuff, and when should I start acting? So now, as I understand, more than half of your clients are in the 50-plus age group. Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
So tell me how these scenarios often come to your attention. You'll get a phone call from a prospective client?
Yeah. So folks will call me sometimes. And it's usually that big aha. My life is not working the way I had hoped it would work. My house doesn't work the way I had hoped it would work. I wanted this haven of peace. I wanted a comfortable place to bring my friends and to bring my family. And I feel really cluttered and embarrassed to have folks here.
Well, are these sometimes triggered, though, by an event in the mm-hmm. older person's life?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. Major life events, losing a friend, losing a spouse, losing a parent. You know, sometimes some of my clients have lost a parent recently and had to go through the parent's house to dispose of everything in the house, and it was really painful for them. And they walked away from that experience saying, I am not going to do that to my kids.
So you would say then that people, even if they're not confronted with a situation that requires action, such as having to move into a smaller mm-hmm. place, but you would say to older people generally that they need to make these decisions before they're thrust upon their kids.
Right, right. Do what's kind to not only yourself, but to also your kids. And downsize your things to a level that's comfortable for you. And talk about things. If you do have things you want to leave to your kids, talk about that. Because sometimes your kids will not be interested in those things. And maybe now, while you can have that discussion, you can find a better recipient for them.
And often what parents think are heirlooms, mm-hmm. these precious items, their kids maybe don't assign that much value. Is that true?
Oh, that's so true. You know, it's kind of like beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Definitely that case. You know, our things often are very iconic of our experiences, and there's a lot of emotional charge with our things. Well, your kids may not share in that emotional charge. So the thing may be more valuable to the parent because of that association with an event.
And I think that often when people are confronted with having to downsize or choosing to downsize, they are struggle with the fact that this item in my hand, for example, is something that, you know, this was belonged to my great aunt. And it seems so special in a lot of ways, and it's very difficult to let go of that. What is it is the mindset that you suggest to your clients? How do they approach this challenge? Tell us how you work with them from that first phone call. Walk us through it.
Well, the first phone call, you know, we basically talk about goals. What do you want to do? Why is now a good time to work with an organizer? And then we talk about what's going to be difficult and what's going to be easy for them. And the best way to work with an organizer often is with the difficult stuff, you know, because the easy stuff you can do on your own, right?
Yeah, so, if I don't have any attachment to it, I don't mind getting rid of that jacket that really doesn't look very good on me anyway.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's the stuff that's easy to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So work with an organizer on the tough stuff. And it's all about dialogue, really, with my clients. I do a lot of coaching with my clients. I want to keep their goals in mind and help them realize their goals. I mean, sometimes we do put obstacles before us. You know, you have a 5-gallon space, but you want to keep 10 gallons worth of stuff. Well, something's going to have to budge there. Either your goal's going to need to change, or you're going to let go of some of your stuff. And in letting go of some of the stuff, we talk about, you know, how can you do that? You know, the obvious choices are you can give it away, you can maybe recycle it, you can maybe throw it away, that sort of thing.
Do you get a lot of pushback on the throw it away? I think about some people that I know that probably have too much stuff in their house, and that, well, I can't throw it away. I mean, they just can't throw it away, even when it's, I might need it, and I might do this. Well, or somebody can use it.
That's the problem, is nobody else wants it.
Exactly.
I mean, even to give it away.
Exactly.
And what do you do with this stuff?
Yeah, so, you know, donation is a wonderful thing, because so many people go to Goodwill, St. Vincent de Paul, all of these places where you can donate to, and they have all sorts of needs. So by donation, people can meet somebody else's needs that they're really adding to that person's life. And I often talk about that, you know, what does it mean to donate something, and tell them about the organization which they're donating. There was a study done that when people can actually relate to the charity that is the recipient of their things, they're much more likely to donate. If they understand how their possessions are going to be meaningful to the recipients, then there's that connection. And again, it's back to that whole emotional spark.
But I wonder if Goodwill and Salvation Army are not inundated with stuff.
They don't want?
I mean, that if, and I'm thinking perhaps of those that are in better areas like Chesterfield, et cetera. But I imagine that over the next 10, 20 years especially, that there's going to be a steady flow of stuff to organizations like that. And I just wonder, to what extent do they, you know, just dread seeing some things come and be given to them?
Well, I'm trying to remember where I was, where I heard an entire situation where they talked about people that would donate things. It's okay to donate things that are not really sellable or saleable, because they then take it and they get a percentage of weight. They send it to a recycler. And so then even if it's old clothes that no one can really use, they will take them, bundle it up, and they still get pennies on the pound, I guess, suppose, for all of that. So well, it's not nearly as bad, even when you think, oh, well, nobody will want that T-shirt that I, you know, wore for the Fun Run race years ago. But maybe they do, because they can at least take it and get some money for the organization.
And that's absolutely right. Yeah. The woman who's in charge of donations for Goodwill came to our local chapter of NAPO and talked about how green they are. And really, they take pretty much everything. I think there is a bit of a moratorium on the old cathode ray tube TVs. Those VMS.
Those environmental.
Yeah. Nobody wants those.
Well, there are electronic recyclers who will happily take those things. Now, you do have to pay to have those recycled now, but it's out of the landfill, and it will get recycled into different electronic stuff.
Okay, and I'm supposed to sleep better because I did it that way.
You are.
Yeah, okay. You will.
A lot of communities will actually have a recycling day. I know Chesterfield has one that was last weekend.
So I wonder if, you mentioned that there's kind of this layer of stuff that you won't have a hard time getting rid of. Mm-hmm. And then at the risk of oversimplification, there's this other layer that is hard. Mm-hmm. So while there's gradations in between, for the most part, it kind of helps to think of it that way, the easy stuff and the hard stuff. Right. And I wonder, though, what percent this might shake out of the average couple, for example, who let's assume has been married 40 years, they're in their 60s, they're moving into a smaller place, or they want to. Maybe there's a health problem with one of them or both of them. So they're confronted with getting rid of some stuff. I mean, might that reduction be as much as 2/3? In other words, might it be that 1/3 is easy and then another 1/3 is really tough and then they end up keeping 1/3? I mean, do you see that sort of dramatic reduction in cases like that?
I've worked with couples who have moved to much smaller places, and they shed a lot. They shed a lot of stuff. And part of what helped that process was to actually have a floor plan and basically plan out, okay, that's where we're going to put the bed. Okay, that's the bookcase we're going to bring. Okay, how many books fit into that bookcase? You know, and actually kind of doing the math ahead of time, because it's hard to argue with the math. I mean, sometimes people do. I worked with one woman who really was trying to argue with the math, and
I'll figure out a way to make it fit.
Exactly. And that was tough. That was really tough.
But in that case, you would say that they should refuse to place anything in storage in that case, because the temptation is to say, well, there's not a place for this beautiful chair that my grandfather made, so I'm going to put it in storage.
Yeah, so when folks bring up storage, storage has a place. You know, when you're in transition from one place to another, sometimes it can be useful to use the storage facility. It's not a good long-term solution for most of my clients. If something is being put in storage to avoid a decision, that's problematic, and we're going to talk about it, and I have to put it out there on the table. You know, it appears as though it's painful to make this decision, and the easiest thing is to not make it and therefore put it into storage, but let's look at what that's going to cost you, not only in terms of dollars and cents, but just the whole idea of having this thing in storage. And
so if you start out with the position that you're not going to use storage, unless, as you point out, it's a transitional situation, but let's assume it's not. So in that case, it just forces you to deal with it then and there. And that's a tough thing, because once you say goodbye to it, that's it. The item's gone, and you want to postpone that, and you believe that your kids will come around maybe.
Yeah.
And develop this appreciation for this precious item.
So, you know, that's interesting. Yeah, the item's gone. So one of the tricks organizers use is to sometimes take photographs of things and put together an album. You know, take a photograph of a person's house before they leave it. And so that way they have those memories, you know, by looking at the pictures. And somehow that can really help ease the pain of letting things go. You know, and to that, a lot of times just telling the story of the thing, you know, it's like, you know, when you go to a wake and people tell stories of the deceased.
Yeah.
And that whole storytelling is a way of coming to terms with letting go. And people do that with their things, too. Mm. They tell stories about the thing so they can let go of it.
Mm. Isn't it partly, this is my thought, that that item represents a piece of their life?
Yeah.
That item, if it was grandma's china, they remember grandma. Mm-hmm. They don't care so much about the china or the fact that they ate. You know, I'll be honest, I have my grandma's sherbet dishes because we would have peaches and that was a family memory for me. My kids aren't going to care. And I periodically will pull them out. Well, we're having peaches in our dishes. You know, oh, okay, Mom. You know, and so they're not going to care about them, but I'm enjoying them for now. And I'm okay with that. So,
yeah, the things that have, you know, one of my colleagues said, it's hard to let go of things that have been witnesses to your life. And it is. It can be really difficult because there are things that have kind of been involved in that whole tapestry of what you've created in your life. And it's not so much the thing itself, it's what it represents. It's how it was a milepost in how you created this life.
And souvenirs are like that. Like, for example, my wife and I have always traveled a lot and from the early days of our marriage. And we would typically buy inexpensive souvenirs. Often, I like to buy coffee cups. Mm-hmm. That's about as affordable as you can get in terms of souvenirs. And so you accumulate these things from all these places. And you're right. It's not so much the object. It's the memories and the association that it triggers. And you hate to part with those things.
Yeah.
But the idea about pictures, that makes sense. It does. You take a photo of it, and to some extent it accomplishes the same purpose in many ways.
Yeah, and having the pictures, and if people need to just annotate their album with some of their stories.
Which they could do with audio or video or just text, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and another way to kind of share this, because people always want to share with their, you know, this younger generation, with their kids and their grandkids and maybe their great-grandkids, is to have a party and basically have folks come and pick out things that are, you know, meaningful. You know, pick out the dishes for the peaches and then the parent can talk about, you know, the stories behind these things. But really that puts a real festive spin on things. And it brings everybody together. So it's a way of honoring just the family. And it's also bringing some honor to those things, too, because people have a lot of emotions attached to their things.
I'd have to require my daughter's attendance at this event on threat of disinheritance. So, yeah, I can see where. And another thing is, a lot of our kids, I suspect that, I don't know this from personal experience with my kids, but my daughters are in college. But I would think as our kids get older, certainly my brother and I came to develop this interest in and appreciation for items by the time we got to our 50s that we had no interest in our 40s and 30s, and certainly not 20s. Mm-hmm. And so I think that to many people, I suspect, of your clients who have older children, they probably do want some of it, you know, but not as much as we all think our kids will want.
Right.
But there probably are some things that they would choose at such an event that you describe.
Yeah. And it's surprising, yes. Sometimes it is the peach dishes. Sometimes it's, you know, a platter that might be chipped. And that platter is important because it was always used at Thanksgiving meal and lots of fun memories around Thanksgiving.
So can you give some suggestions for when people acquire, let's talk to the people who will be downsizing and moving into smaller space. You mentioned that when they've identified a place that they go in, they have a floor plan, and they make decisions before moving day as to what will go where specifically and concretely confront what there's not a space for.
Yeah.
Do you come in some way, or can you make suggestions of ways in which they can most efficiently use the space, given that it's smaller? And let's assume that there are some things they still want to keep. Are there ideas you would have for maximizing the space on something that's smaller?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, maximizing the space, always go vertical. You know, use bookcases for storage, you know, and in a small footprint of space, it's better to kind of go high because you can store things higher. You know, I love using bookcases, not only for books, but for, you know, collections of things and
shelves.
Storage of things.
And
yeah.
So people, to the extent that they have 9-10 foot ceilings, and in Florida, it's not uncommon to see 11 and 12 foot ceilings. For people who are determined to use their space, then that's one way to do it, is to go up.
Absolutely. Go up. Yeah. Use that wall space to store things in an attractive way. And sometimes you can put doors on bookcases so you don't have to look at what's behind the doors, too. And that can be really nice. Use furniture that's double purpose, you know, ottomans that you can store things in, or chairs that fold out to a bed so you can have a guest bedroom.
That's really efficient, you know, to have any room can be a sleeping space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are ways that you can maximize your space.
So would you suggest then that they at the time that they're making this decision, do they often use consultants or space planners as a part of that move?
Well, I'm going to say it's always great to bring in an organizer.
And how is that? Give people a sense of what that costs. Less about what you are specifically, than what would they expect to pay in the market?
Well, in this area, organizers cost between $40 and $100 an hour. And, you know, it's a big variation because folks have different specialties and folks have different experiences, too. So a less experienced organizer is probably going to cost less than somebody, you know, like me, who's been doing this for 12 years. But sometimes bringing in an experienced person is a good thing. So it's not always about the money. But between $40 and $100, and, you know, it's actually easy to find an organizer. You can go on napostl.com, which is the website for the local St. Louis NAPO site. National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals.
Okay.
Now, let me ask a question. Mm-hmm. So let's say that we're deciding to do this. During that hour, let's say that they're meeting with you, do you actually, you just give them ideas? Do you actually help them do it? Do you help go through the clutter? Do you, what are you going to do? They're going to walk away with a game plan and then say, you take care of it? I mean, how does it work?
That is a really good question. So, you know, that the first thing I do is ask a client, what is your goal? Some folks just want to have a game plan. Just help us develop a plan, because right now we just feel overwhelmed with all the things we need to do to downsize. So that's what we'll do. We'll sit down and we actually create a plan. You know, I've toured the place. I try to get a layout of their next home and try to chart everything out. And that's what we do. It's step by step.
So that will they'll end up with a plan. If they use an organizer that is mm-hmm. good at what they do, mm-hmm. then they would end up with a plan which would assign a particular place to each of the things that are leaving their home to the new space, mm-hmm. if it's a move, and also would identify those things that would be given away or found some other use for.
Well, it's hard to go through an entire household's worth of stuff in an hour and say, we're going to give away this and we're going to give that.
Not an hour.
But certainly with furniture and those sort of big things, one of the tricks I use when I'm walking through the home with a client is to use Post-its to mark things. You know, green means it's going, and any other color, purple, pink, whatever I happen to have on hand, means that it's not going. If there's somebody they have in mind, you know, Cousin Joey wants it, well, then I'll write Joey's name on the Post-it and stick it on that piece of furniture. And that visual can be really helpful. And sometimes just having that visual helps kind of unstick people and get them in motion now to downsize.
Mm-hmm. And so this might be a 5 to 10 hours, depending on the amount of specificity, I assume.
Yeah, the amount of specificity and also the size of the house and the amount of stuff. And there's a lot of my clients, I do hands-on work, where we're actually going through the drawers, we're going through the closets.
That sounds like 50 hours.
Going through the ends. Yeah, sometimes those things take longer. And again, the best way to leverage an organizer is to use that organizer for the hard stuff. So if you can do the storage closet by yourself, then do the storage closet by yourself. But if the closet that's in your bedroom is intimidating, then use an organizer for that. Organizers often give assignments between organizing appointments, and that assignment would be something like, this is what you can do on your own, and this is how you're going to do it. Do you need me to check in? What does accountability look like on this? You know, do you want to call me so we can high five when it's done? You know, organizers really often coach folks into how they can get things done and encourage folks, you know, because we know we're there side by side with our clients. We know how challenging it can be to go through stuff, and we're there to celebrate with them. Those victories are really important.
So what comments would you have for people who have lots of clothes? They have these closets where they have been filled up with dresses and clothes going all the way back to high school. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of a family member in particular.
Why do we all have family members?
Yes.
Maybe I'm the family member.
So I'm wondering, how would you approach talking to that person about downsizing that closet?
So we talk about what their life is like today, not what the potential is. So the one day maybe nebulous future where all of these miraculous things are going to happen, we don't talk about that. We talk about today, really what is going on today. Focus on that, what their needs are today. And when things come up, you know, I know it's a size 6 and I'm a size 10, but one day I'm going to fit into that. You know, what is holding on to this reminder of the size that you're not going to do for you? I mean,
and I've heard the rule of thumb that if you've not worn something in a year, now you might push it, I would say 2 years, but the point is, if you were to say to a person that have you worn this in the last 2 years, and of course 90% of the things they have not, is that often a useful tool?
You know, a lot of folks I work with will say, oh yeah, you're right. You're right. Or if they're like, oh, I want to hold on to it longer. I'm like, well, what is holding on to it doing for you?
Yeah. There's always that possibility there'll be a ball, grand ball where I'll wear this thing again.
Well, but the style has probably changed.
Yeah.
See, with clothes, I think that's a little, I mean, I don't know. For me, that's a little easier. Well, by the time I get into that, it's not going to, I'm going to buy something new.
Do you find that clothes are a big deal, though? Is that a common problem, people accumulate clothes, or is that less of an issue?
It's up there in the top 10.
What would be some of the other, what would be the top five?
Cooking things. You know, we're a nation of foodie wannabes, you know. Uh-huh. Food Network stars, possibly.
All right.
So I find often, you know, kitchen gadgets can be a little problematic. Paper probably is the number one. Paper.
Documents of
various
sorts.
What do you keep? What don't you keep?
What about magazine subscriptions?
Actually, magazines, I would say that's up there pretty high. I don't know if it's in the top five.
I don't know what the reasoning is for keeping magazines. It's the whole
potential. It's that beautiful, glossy, perfect life out there and just touching it.
Uh-huh.
And maybe, just maybe, you can partake in that.
I don't know. I think some people think that there may be an article that I saw in that Newsweek from 1963.
That I'm going to want, and I want to be able to put my hands on it.
Now, by the time they get that old, maybe they do have some value. But the point is, people who just, as a matter of course, when they subscribe to magazines, they keep them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's not one of my particular flaws. That's not on my list, so I pick on that one.
Yeah. Information is, in fact, actually, there's kind of a new realization that people will hoard information. Just like they'll hoard physical things. And part of that is that there's an anxiety of not being in the know and that fear of missing out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drives that I've got to have this, because what's at risk is me making a wrong decision, and that is seen as catastrophic.
So I guess then that people who are confronted with this, the husbands and wives may not necessarily agree about what to keep or to keep. Do you find that common?
That's probably the rule of the road.
In other words, one is more retentive than the other?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there gender biases here? I mean, is there gender tendencies here? Males more retentive or less retentive, or women more or less?
You know, I don't see it so much as that. No.
Patterns there.
Women tend to call organizers more frequently than men do. But I think the reason for that may be that women are in the habit of or are comfortable of calling for help when it's needed.
Guys figure they're already good at that.
Yeah, it's
whether they are or not.
It kind of resonates with that whole stereotype about, do you ask for directions if you're lost, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do men and women save differently? I mean, are the things like a woman might keep, are they more household types of things or the kids, whereas men might be stuff from their high school years?
Or sports.
Sports things, sports memorabilia. I mean, does that happen often or no?
I definitely see sports stuff with guys, but I've seen sports stuff with women too, because, you know, I've worked with some women who've were quite accomplished athletes. Women I noticed keep more kid stuff, and that could be because in this society, we see more women caring for kids than we see Mr. Moms. You know, I haven't worked with many guys who were the sole caretaker or the the primary caretaker of their kids. So,
so what do you say to people who want to hang on to all their kids' trophies and stuff? I mean, I can see where there'd be that tendency.
Well, we have to talk about, you know, if everything's special, then nothing's special. You know, that's kind of a harsh reality. But I ask them about their kids. You know, what's special about your kids? What are your kids' talents? What makes you smile when you think about your kid? And those are the things that you want to keep, the things that basically showcase those talents. Those are the things you want to keep. You know, the work page that anybody could have done, that's really not showcasing your kid's talents. So you want to keep the things that are really indicative of your child. And then also, how much space do you have?
And I guess some of those things you can pass down to your kids.
Well, I did put together for both of my boys, one's 20, one's 15, but I have a kind of like a 12-month big file folder, and I put something for each grade. So I kept a few papers from each grade, and maybe their report card or their yearbook or something like that. And so they will periodically look through it and, oh, yeah, I remember that. And I kept stories they wrote. So at least I feel like it's manageable, and yet I'm still giving them part of their heritage and their who they were when they were little that they may not remember. So I don't know if that's helpful, but that's what's worked for me.
That's a great way to do it.
Yeah, that's a manageable amount of information. Mm-hmm. So then this, do you see, if we step back for a minute and look at what these trends are, do you see this upswing in the amount of activity that is happening in your profession? You know, we hear about this demographic tidal wave that is the graying of America and the impact it's going to have on a lot of things, not just financial things, but it'll have social effects and psychological effects, family effects, and all those things. And I would think that with all the people confronting, I mean, here we've been a society that is a consumption society. I mean, more than anywhere on the planet, I think, is that we consume stuff. And consuming, though, often means that it sits around our house after we buy it and we no longer use it. And so I'm wondering whether this will become a epidemic need that Americans will have as they start hitting that 50-plus period.
I think the need for organizers and this focus on minimalism is definitely a response to our consumer society. Minimalism is growing, especially among the millennials. You know, the idea that by shedding stuff, you're opening your life up to more experiences and less overhead. And with less overhead, you're more free to go out and do some things, you know, pursue some real life experiences. There is a book coming out in January is called Death Cleaning. Now, it's entitled with the Swedish word for death cleaning, which I don't speak Swedish, so I can't pronounce it. But that book to me kind of shows, yeah, here we are talking about how do we organize for death.
Yeah.
And it sounds like this is really morbid, but actually it's a way of downsizing your house with the idea that you're picking out, that you're keeping things that may make somebody happy. You know, would somebody want to come across this, you know, after I'm gone? It does put one face to face with one's own mortality, but
And I can see that. I mean, first of all, again, we have a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, this wasn't so much an issue 500 years ago.
No.
And so now we have a lot of stuff. And And these aren't things that you put in a will and expect people to look forward to receiving. I mean, this is stuff that's a burden in many cases.
Yeah. Well, and I like what you said about it's freeing up your life. I think the less stuff we have to manage and pay for and clean and rake and all of those other things, the more time we have to live life.
That's definitely true.
To invest in others, to use the income that we're not using for car maintenance maybe or whatever, to travel or to do things with your grandkids or whatever's really important to you. So it's really not as much about subtraction as it is about addition, it seems to me.
Right. That's good. Yeah. That's well said.
Yeah, and
it does seem like that. And I've read a little bit about minimalism, and I don't know if our listeners are familiar with that idea or not, but minimalism, as the name implies, is this sort of philosophy that has gained hold, as you said, with many people who are younger, millennials and whatnot. But it's just the idea that when you own stuff, it occupies a space in your head, in your brain, whether consciously or unconsciously, when you just have stuff, because it means you're responsible for it, you have to keep track of it. And as you point out, Susan, that there's stuff that requires your time regularly to maintain and upkeep. So these people have concluded that, you know, life can be a lot richer if you keep your stuff down to the absolute minimum. And this is kind of, to some people, it's a radical idea, and it can be radical, period. But in many cases, you know, it is more moderate. But the whole idea is to have a lot less stuff than you otherwise would or could. And that's attractive to me. But boy, it does require a real confrontation with your lifestyle if you say, I'm going to go down this road. Because suddenly you look at your house, and many of us have houses that are much bigger than what we need. Some of us have a car, one or two, beyond what we need. Or maybe we have a car that is more than what we need. So, I mean, there's so many, every corner of our lives we have excess.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I think folks start to shut down when they think about it. It's not so much that the idea isn't attractive or has some merit to them. It's, so where do I start? And it's that sense of feeling overwhelmed. And that's the point where a lot of my clients are when they first call. They're just overwhelmed.
So what would you have them do? I mean, I know people like that, and that is exactly where they are. They are so overwhelmed. Their house is so cluttered, and it's really probably dangerous because there's stuff all over the floor, magazines on the floor, and that kind of thing. Where do they start? What's the first step?
You know, the first step is to make a plan. And interestingly, when you start taking action on the thing that feels overwhelming, it's the amount of anxiety and the feeling of overwhelm starts to diminish. Overwhelm often comes from more from fear and from feeling out of control of something. But once you start putting a plan together, you're facing the facts, you're facing the fears, and that sense of overwhelm starts to dissipate then. So make a plan. You know, start out, what are my goals here? What do I really want to accomplish? And then start.
Well, the goal is to end up with less stuff. So let's assume that's the goal, is to get rid of a bunch of stuff.
Well, and what does less stuff mean, though? You know, does it mean half of what I have? And to what end, too?
More the better. And let's just say that the end is, it's spatial, meaning less space, but it's also psychological.
Yeah.
So if you just kind of start then with that determination.
So, you know, I want to make it a little, the goal concrete, you know, so that there's just a little bit more draw to it, you know. So if people can actually kind of almost feel their goal, and that's why, like, when folks are moving to a smaller place, it's good to draw that
tangible.
Out.
That's pretty tangible, yeah.
Yeah, it's tangible. It's hard to argue with what's tangible.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually track your progress, and that's the other thing, track progress. So if you let go of, you know, a 30-gallon trash bag of stuff or, you know, five banker's boxes worth of stuff, track that. By tracking it, you can see you're making progress. But, hey, high five for everything that you do. That's a step in the right direction. That's important, too. So know not only where you're going, but also what's appealing about that. What are you going to get from it? Because if you're always subtracting, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. Mm-hmm. You need to have something to fill up that space.
Well, you go out and buy more stuff.
No. So that's where you start to say, okay, I am giving up the stuff because there is nothing free. There is a cost to everything. It's an overhead cost. You know, I have to manage it. I have to dust it off. I have to refill it. I have to do whatever to take care of it. And that's the overhead. So everything has overhead. Nothing is free. Nothing's mm-hmm. free, except for maybe a smile, you know. Get all mm-hmm. kumbaya. But, yeah, so think about what the cost of these things are and what you're getting in return.
And on that idea, though, of going forward so that you do end up, in fact, with a net reduction, so you have to change your habits going forward, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, you do. So, you know, primarily acquire less.
So somebody has to want to do this. I mean, you know, I guess I keep thinking of situations where maybe you have the kids, who the kids might want to call you and say, hey, can you help my mom, my dad, my whatever. But unless the person is really on board, there's not a whole lot we can do going forward, or is there?
Right. Well, so I get phone calls from adult children often. And because I do deal with some hoarding issues, sometimes I get concerned calls about a parent hoarding. And typically someone who is hoarding may not be at a spot where they readily want to change. So I may have a conversation with someone about why would it be good to work on their house? Why would it be good to downsize? And hear what they have to say about that. You know, if they say everything, you know, I don't want to do this. Everything in your house is perfect the way it is.
Well, and then the children will someday they'll organize that mm-hmm. in their own
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you hear about that. And, of course, those television mm-hmm. shows that I haven't mm-hmm. watched, but I hear that they have a hoarding television show, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. they do.
Couple.
Or
yeah.
did.
So, I mean, it's funny. People are fascinated by that. Maybe it's because they see a bit of themselves in that person. Yeah. But so we have a little over a minute left, and I want to be sure that we've kind of talked about some of the practical ideas that are available to help people as they get older make mm-hmm. some of these tough decisions. And is there some place that you would suggest they go for additional information? You mentioned a place where they can find consultants in addition to yourself. Mm-hmm. But what resources would you suggest?
Well, there are several resources. So certainly the St. Louis chapter of the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals, NAPOSTL.com.
NAPOSTL.com.
That's a great place.
Okay.
Also on the national level, NAPO.net, which is the national organization.
We'll put that on our website.
Yeah.
Is there a good book?
Is there a good book? Oh, there are several good books. I can probably leave several good books. Judith Kohlberg has several good books on downsizing, for instance.
So, Susan, let's add a couple of those to the website, okay?
Okay? Mm-hmm.
So, those of you listening will get the names of a couple of books and add them to the website. Denise, wonderful, wonderful information. The organization Clear Spaces Professional Organizing and Coaching, www.clearspaces.org. Denise, it's wonderful, very helpful, Denise Lee. And next week, we'll pick up with more useful and interesting information. This has been Elder Talk.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.